Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and it's me, Deb Wolf. You know I'm broadcasting out here from Camp Good Dog, but today we've got a special treat, and I'm hoping each week we'll get to hear from Dr. Justin Lee. So here's our first segment ever with me, Deb Wolf, dog trainer, cat trainer, talking with the good doctor, Dr. Justin Lee. Welcome to the show, doctor.
Thank you so much for having me on, Deb.
It's good to have you, and I think your name's probably Justine, now that I hear your voice more carefully, and so welcome to the show, Justine.
Thank you.
I've read your resume. It's pretty extensive, includes some Ivy League colleges and residencies and head of animal poison control, all kinds of great stuff. So I'm guessing you're going to tell us something about winter dangers and poisons to our furry friends. Can you help us out with keeping them safe?
Absolutely. That's why I'm here. One of my passions as an emergency critical care specialist and toxicologist is educating pet owners on how they can avoid that emergency room visit to start with. So as winter is, you know, still several months left, I always tell people the first thing you want to do when it comes to keeping your pet safe this winter is making sure that you're providing adequate shelter. I know most of us, I let my dog sleep on my bed, he's always in the house, but I know there are some pet owners out there that leave their dog outside for a significant portion of the day or even all the time. So really important to make sure they have adequate warm shelter, a bowl that doesn't freeze, so using something like a water heater, and bedding or straw that keeps them warm. The second thing is, if you have one of those breeds that has really short hair, like a greyhound, a boxer, a Great Dane.
Minpin, the tiny little ones? Yeah.
Exactly, the little chihuahuas. You know, in those situations, I definitely would add a jacket on when you go outside, especially if it's less than 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So definitely important. It's not just for show. It's definitely for added warmth. And this is especially important if your dog has skin disease or has thin body condition. And then the third thing is,
Doctor, last week we had a caller, and they were asking about their dog's baldness. And the vet that was on figured out that it was probably due to the dog coming into heat. It's a breeding dog and high estrogen levels. But that would be a case, if your dog's missing a whole hunk of hair or fur, then that definitely is a case for a jacket, I would think.
That's right, for sure. And check with your vet, because there could be underlying skin disease that's causing that baldness to begin with.
Okay, so let's continue with the winter dangers, please.
Sure. The third tip I have, a lot of people overhype ice salt. And even if you buy a pet-friendly type of ice salt, you have no idea what your neighbors are putting down on the sidewalk. The good thing is most of those salt products or those ice melting products aren't really too poisonous unless your dog actually gets into the whole bag of it. My safest tip is when you walk your dog, if you notice that they're picking up their feet just from the salt, dirt, or the ice crystals forming from snowballs between their feet, put booties on them. So I usually use booties on my dog when it gets below 15 degrees. 15 to 20 degrees is always my cutoff temperature. The other thing is, before you get them into the house, walk them through clean snow, and that helps get some of the salt off. I also will use a damp terry cloth and just wipe their feet. If they lick some small amounts of that salt, it's not a big deal. But if
what about hosing them off? Yeah, what if your dog's really been playing
them.
In a salted area? Would you hose them off or no?
I wouldn't hose them. I don't think they need a whole bath. I would just use a damp terry cloth that's pretty wet to get that salt off their paws, just
okay.
So they're not constantly licking at it. It can cause some irritation. And more importantly, we don't want them constantly licking it because it can cause a hot spot or a moist dermatitis in that area.
Yeah, you know, I think for people out there listening, if your dog is light-colored and it has brown stains around its feet or mouth, that's usually a sign that it's something's not quite right because it's the saliva staining. So you might not actually catch your dog excessively licking or fussing over something, but the stain might be your clue. Well, how else can people know if their dog has a problem, like one of the ones you've already mentioned, like the skin diseases and the baldness that's not accounted for? What other tips would they help them kind of catch these things?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, one of the clues that you just said, that brown staining, people put up with a lot of that stuff when in actuality it usually means there's an underlying problem. So even though you see saliva staining, it usually means it's an underlying hay fever, what we call atopy in veterinary medicine. So instead of sneezing and having running eyes like humans do, dogs just lick and itch constantly instead. So that's an easy sign.
Oh.
For cat owners... Oh,
wait a minute. What about those runny eyes? Those dogs you see, they're usually Maltese, toy poodles, Bichon Frises, little white cute dogs, and they're adorable except for this disgusting brown stain dripping down their eye. I mean, I always think that there's got to be a nutrition problem there. I've heard it has to do with enzymes. Am I on to something there, or is it genetic?
Well, they actually just, it's actually interesting that you brought that up because that's sort of cutting edge news. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration that regulates all drugs, just actually got back to this company saying you can't use tearamycin, an antibiotic, for those tear medications to help wipe away those tears. That staining that you're seeing, that brown staining, is just residue from tears. And when we see that, it's often either allergies or sometimes it can be a blocked nasal lacrimal duct. That's a fancy way of saying there's a tube between your eye and your nose. So when you cry, the tears go from your eyes down into your nose. That's why you're sniffling. Same thing with dogs. If they have a blocked duct, what can happen in some of these small dogs is they end up having a lot of tears coming out of their eyes instead of draining into their nose normally. So it could be an underlying issue that you may need to talk to your veterinarian about.
Are the pushed-in face, the pug-type dogs, more likely to have this problem or not?
You know, no. It's the breeds that you mentioned before. It's usually white dogs like Maltese, Bichon Frises, Yorkshire Terriers. The smushed face, what we call brachiocephalic, has its own total set of medical problems. But thankfully, tear staining isn't usually one of them.
Well, thank God, because they've got enough problems as it is, and any owner will know that.
Exactly.
Well, we're running out of time. If there's one more winter danger poisonous tip for dogs, can you leave us with that before we have to go? Dr. Justine Lee has been with us today on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And we have about a minute. So what would you like them to know before we have to go, Doctor?
Sure. If you live near water, when in doubt, keep your dog off the ice. Because dogs aren't smart enough to sense if the ice is going to break through. And I've seen the rare, severe case where dogs will fall through the ice and develop severe hypothermia. So when in doubt, if you live on a lake or live near a river, if you think it's frozen over, the safest thing to do is to always keep your dog off the ice.
When I was a dog walker, I had a dog do that. A big yellow lab named Bo, fatter than all the other dogs, went trotting out on the ice and fell through. And the worst part of the whole thing is after I got him out, after I went in the ice water and had this bruise line where the ice was hitting my body as it refroze me, it was a terrible situation. After I got him all the way out and everything, he jumped back in. Oh my gosh.
Oh,
so I had to rescue him twice. And there was a group of kids, you know, holding a rope with their teacher watching. And oh, it was just terrible. Okay. So thank you so much for your contribution this week, Dr. Justine Lee. Everybody, we'll have her back really soon. Stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
And anytime you're near.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, A true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. At clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. Purr Spray Pet, all-natural, non-toxic spray for all of your pet problems. Proven safe to use for their skin, eyes, and ears. Helps calm and heal wounds, hot spots, insect bites, and lots more. Will not sting and very safe to use, even for your feathered friends. To find out how you can keep your pets happy and healthy, go to purrspraypet.com. That's purrspraypet.com. purrspraypet.com. Or call us now at 386-310-3924. Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And once again, we've got this week our guest contributor, Dr. Justine Lee, a board-certified veterinarian, a specialist in both emergency critical care, and also she works at the Poison Control Center, and she's head of it. And she's coming to us to keep our animals safe on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. So welcome to the show, Dr. Justine Lee.
Thanks so much for having me on, Deb.
Oh, it's great to have you. Okay, so since it's still kind of fresh in our minds, our New Year's resolutions, what would you say the top New Year's resolutions should be for somebody's cat, for the cat owners out there?
You know, they're going to be the same exact New Year's resolutions I have for myself, to eat less and exercise more. But it's so important because studies have shown, at least in dogs, when we feed them less and that they're in good body condition, they live on average 1 to 2 years longer. While there aren't any studies looking at that in cats, we know that obese cats or overweight cats are much more likely to be diabetic and require twice-a-day insulin. We know that they're much more likely to have orthopedic problems from all that extra strain on their body. So my two simple clues are, one, instantly cut back on the amount that you're feeding by about 25%. And that's a good general rule for the majority of cat owners out there. The second thing I recommend is feeding the food in a Buster ball or intelligence ball, a ball that stimulates them, where your cat has to play with it and work with it in order to get the food to come out of the ball. It's a great way of exercising them and stimulating them at the same time. And then my third clue is increasing their exercise. Most people don't think they can exercise their cats, but they can. If you have the luxury of living in a house that has 3 floors, I like to put the food on one level, the kitty litter on a totally different level. And that way they're walking up multiple flights of stairs several times a day. The second thing I like to do is at least once a week, set your smartphone timer and use a real timer and actually play with your cat for at least 5 to 10 minutes. It doesn't sound like very much, but most pet owners don't do that. So literally using a laser pointer or one of those feather on a string toys is a great way of exercising them. And by just doing that and increasing the frequency down the line, you can really help keep your cat healthier, help them lose weight, and more mentally stimulated.
Wow, I've heard of that with dogs. And I have a cat toy like that from the Kong Company. They sent me one once with all the, you know, the things to stuff in it. My cats do have cat doors and the access to the outdoors. So they've never been that interested in these things. You know, they like catnip and they like certain treats. But the treat is kind of counterproductive to the activity if the treat's too decadent, right? So how do you figure out with people how to get that ratio right, where they're not just, you know, giving their dog a gigantic calorie intake for sitting when told, or giving their cat a lot of extra calories for maybe not so much activity?
Great question. You know, we don't think about it. We think one treat isn't a big deal, but that could be the equivalent of 10 to 20 calories, and that could be a tenth of your cat's diet. So when in doubt, when I use those enrichment toys like the Kong toys or the Buster Balls, I'll just feed their meals in that. So that way they have to play in order to get their meal. The other option is, and you can't do this for cats per se, but for dogs, you can use low-calorie, high-fiber treats that are safe if your dog is willing to eat them. So if your cat, if your dog loves things like broccoli
if your
or
dog
green
is willing
beans
to eat
or
them.
Popcorn, you can use that instead as a treat. If that doesn't work, you can always use, you know, other treats. Just try to use the lower-calorie ones. For cats, I will still reward them with treats, but sometimes I'll use, I'll subtract that from the amount that I'm feeding. And that's why I'm saying if you're using treats as rewards, make sure that you're cutting back appropriately on the amount that you're feeding your cat. A quarter of a cup twice a day doesn't sound like a lot, but that's enough to get the 200 calories that your cat needs a day.
Well, you know what? When you talk about setting the timer, I've often told people that if you're cuddling with your dog on the couch and you're watching a whole movie or you're watching YouTube videos, you know, take the interruption that's there between videos or, you know, if you're doing a marathon and you've watched episode 5 and now you're about to go to the washroom, get a drink and start episode 6, that's the time to make your dog do a bunch of tricks. And then sit down and cuddle for another half hour, because otherwise, I think we don't realize how stagnant their lives are sometimes.
That's a great point. In fact, I know they're in the process of releasing the voice collar, and it's sort of like a Fitbit for dogs. It's a great way of seeing how much exercise your dog gets, how well they're sleeping, what their heart rate is. So for me, it's a great goal for being able to make sure that I'm exercising my dog at least 30 minutes a day. And that's my general philosophy. People ask me all the time, oh, I'm thinking about getting a dog. My general rule is if you can't walk it twice a day for 15 minutes, don't get a dog. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but I can't tell you how many owners don't do that nowadays.
Oh, I, as a dog trainer, I get this all the time. You know, the person asks me all these questions and, you know, how can I get him to come on call? How can I get him to stop jumping up? How can I get him to stop stealing things as if he wants to get caught? And I tell them the answer to each problem. But the bottom line is if that dog got walked every day for a serious workout every morning before the guy left it for work, big dog park or a jog or something like that. It's a 2.5-year-old Mastiff Lab Cross, okay? And it is, like, seriously fit. If it got out like that every day, and then in the afternoon it got half-hour walk or run, and maybe a walk around the block at night, all the other problems would be gone. So he's wasting his money and his time addressing problems that are really just a bored, hyper dog.
I totally agree. And that's what I always tell people. You have to be able to commit to at least 30 minutes a day and at least 2 semesters of puppy or dog obedience. It makes your life and your dog's life so much better. And again, it makes me so sad when I see Labradors or Border Collies cooped up in crates and hardly getting any exercise. A lot of people say, well, you know, I let them outside into the backyard. They don't get that exercise cooped up in a backyard. You physically have to walk them. So important for people to do that. And that would be my top New Year's resolution for everyone. And it keeps you healthier too.
Well, the backyard thing. If your dog has another dog to play with in the backyard and you don't mind them tearing up the yard, that works. Or if your dog has a kid who's willing to throw the ball, that works. But if you expect him to just play by himself out there all alone and he's an adult dog, I mean, the choices are limited. Either he's going to find a game like dig or bark or fence run, because there's no game. Why don't people understand this? Okay, well, we have to go today. We only have 1 minute left. That was your big homework for people. Watch your watch, okay? Don't think you've given your dog enough time or your cat enough time. Actually write down and look at and pay attention to when you start and when you finish. I think that's so important. And when you have more than one pet, you'd be surprised how skewed it is. You've been favoring someone. Bet you anything. Your 10 minutes with your favorite pet seems like 1 minute. And your 1 minute with your ex-husband's pet, well, that seems like an hour. So even it up. Thanks for joining us again, Dr. Justine Lee, everybody. And will you come back again next week?
Thanks so much.
Okay, so we'll have her back again next week to do another segment. That's it for her, but we'll be continuing on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with my next guest. Stay tuned.
dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo lick it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426. Or on the web, www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And once again, we get to talk to the vet girl, vetgirlontherun.com, I believe. Welcome to the show, Dr. Justine Lee, once again.
Thank you so much for having me on, Deb.
I just find out more and more about you as we go along. I love it, Vet Girl on the Run. That sounds great. So, so today for Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk listeners, we have how to pet-proof your house. Okay, how do they pet-proof their houses, Doctor?
Great question. So one of the top emergencies I see as an emergency critical care specialist is accidental poisonings. And people won't think about this, but some of the top poisons that I see, 50% of the poisonings I see are human medications. Dogs getting into antidepressants or ADD medications, Tylenol, Advil, and it's usually by accident. So my 3 little tips, especially if you have a Labrador who's a chow hound, are, first of all, to crate train your dog. So important that we teach dogs and educate our pet owners how to appropriately crate train. Crate training is not punishment. If you appropriately crate train your dog as a puppy, they should view their crate as a den, an area of safety that they want to electively go into and sleep in. So,
and it's really easy. You know, I think most people, they think cage, they think jail, they think very human perspective. You know, a dog likes a cave. He likes a den. He likes it if he gets fed there and he gets treats there and he's safe there. He likes it, right?
Exactly. So always feed your dog his treats, his food in the crate when you're home. Make sure you open the crate door so your dog can go in whenever he wants. So really view your crate training as an appropriate way of making sure that you're providing a safe place for your dog.
But what about the punishment? Because sometimes people want to use their crate for punishment, and then it gets difficult.
And that's actually not ideal. That's not what we're using it for. So, you know, if the dog urinates on the floor and you say, go to your crate, it shouldn't be as punishment. It shouldn't be, you know, like sending your kid to the room. We want to use this as a positive association because ideally a well-trained dog will go into its crate and it'll be safe and it'll view it as a sleeping place while you're at work.
The other thing that people can do is, you know, if they do get something wrong, like go to the bathroom in the wrong place or bark or jump up or whatever it is, just make sure right then and there you get the dog to do it right a bunch of times. So he did it wrong once and he got a mild no or bad dog even if you have to. But then you tell him what he's supposed to do. Lie down. Good boy.
Absolutely.
Lie down. Good boy. Lie down. Stay. Good dog. Shake paw. Good boy. This sort of thing. So he's getting so much time and attention for the things you want to see repeated, not the thing you want to see go away.
Great point. Great point, Deb. I'm a huge advocate of positive reinforcement. So when your dog goes into the crate for the treat, say, good crate. You know, so you're rewarding your dog and they're making it associated with a positive thing. So pet-proofing tip number 1, make sure you crate train your dog appropriately. And when you're not at home, make sure you crate train your dog and keep them in the crate. It's a good way of keeping your dog from counter surfing or getting into accidental poisonings. My second tip is to make sure when you get home and your kids get home from work that you hang up your purse, backpack, or briefcase because there are so many poisonous things that are in there. Things like sugar-free gum, which contains xylitol, that can cause a really severe life-threatening drop in blood sugar, and it can actually cause liver failure. things like
Oh, I always worry about that at Halloween and Easter because people think, oh, well, if it's not chocolate, it's okay. No, it's not okay. Artificial sweeteners are not okay for animals. It's so good you're bringing that up.
Anything
Easter's
that's sugar-free.
Coming soon.
Yeah, anything that's sugar-free, you want to be careful that it contains xylitol. The other thing is a lot of people always keep a small bottle of ibuprofen or Tylenol or their prescription medications in their bag, and their dog could accidentally get into that. Cell phone batteries, coins, hand sanitizer, all these things are typically in a backpack or a purse. Even a small thing of snacks of raisins that can cause kidney failure. So again, elevate your purse or backpack or briefcase so your dog can't get into it. The third tip is when people put their human medications into those weekly pill holders, they sound like plastic rattles. And so they'll put, you know, their heart medication and their water pill and their aspirin and their fish oil through Monday through Sunday. Their dog chews into it. They're getting into a huge amount of medication. And unfortunately, most pet owners don't always know what kind of medication's in there. So I always recommend keeping that pill holder out of reach in a secured cabinet and also making sure you store your pills in a totally different area than your dog's pills. I can't tell you how many times I've seen pet owners accidentally take their pet's pills and they accidentally give their human pills to their dog by accident.
Is that as bad as it sounds? That sounds terrible. Like, I mean, if you've got a Great Dane, that's bad. But if you don't, if you have a toy poodle and he's getting a dose for a 160-pound man and he's 8 pounds, God, that could cause problems, couldn't it?
It could be super poisonous. That's right. And then the fourth tip is, if you're about to travel, don't dump all your pills in a little plastic bag and throw it in your suitcase, because there's weird smells coming from those pills, and your dog or your cat could chew into them really easily because they're not pet-proof. Remember, child-proof prescription bottles are not tooth-proof from dogs. So those are 3 to 4 simple tips. My last tip.
You know what? They're not really child-proof either. They're like very difficult to get into for the adults with the arthritis, but they're really okay for
kids.
That's
true.
Honestly.
All right. And then my last tip is always make sure to pre-program your cell phone with your veterinarian's phone number, the emergency veterinarian, and ASPCA animal poison control. That way, when you're stressed out, your dog gets into something poisonous, you always have an instant phone number that you can call for life-saving advice. The last tip I wanted to give is a lot of products in the house have a 1-800 number on the back. And so anything under the kitchen sink or in the garage, mouse and rat poison, a lot of these products have an 800 number that you can call 24 hours a day for life-saving advice for both humans and animals. So when in doubt, always call for advice. It's always easier to treat a dog or a cat immediately for poisoning versus once they develop signs of poisoning days later. So it's less expensive and it's better for your pet when you treat it right away.
Okay, wait a minute. I assumed, you know, the pet ingests something and right away they start to seizure, foam at the mouth maybe, heart rate elevates or they can't get up. Is that not right? It can be days later? Really?
It can be days later. So while a lot of the human medications can cause tremors and seizures within a couple of hours, some of the poisons like grapes and raisins, which cause kidney failure in dogs, we don't actually see damage for 2 days. So when in doubt, get to a vet sooner in the beginning because it's going to be less expensive. We can induce vomiting. We can give charcoal. We can give anti-vomiting medication. And it's going to be a whole lot less expensive than if you wait until your pet is already in severe kidney failure or has really severe clinical signs already.
Okay, now what about if you think your pet's got into something like cigarettes or alcohol or marijuana, like something like that? Say, like, what do people do? There's no 1-800 number to call.
Well, there is actually.
There's
an animal poison control. You can always call ASPCA Animal Poison Control for life-saving advice 24/7. There is a fee per call just to run the animal poison control, but they can teach you whether or not it's appropriate to treat at home versus getting to a vet right away. Like I mentioned before, hang up that purse or backpack so your pets don't get into cigarettes. Cigarettes are really dangerous. Nicotine, it only takes a small amount to result in severe signs of tremors and seizures in dogs. So even a couple of chewed up, partially used cigarettes can be poisonous to a small dog.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us again. It's been Dr. Justine Lee with us, and she's been on NBC Weekend Today, The Rachel Ray Show. I keep giving your credentials a little bit at a time each week because they're so long. You just done everything, so we're very privileged to have you here at Smart Animal Talk, all Paws Pet Talk Radio. And I know you'll be coming back next week. So everybody, stay safe. Get those numbers put in your phones. Keep your purse and your backpack out of the way. Watch your meds. Thank you. Thank you very much, Doctor. All right, everybody, stay tuned
thanks
for more Smart
in.
Animal Talk. Yeah, thanks for coming. We'll talk to you again next week. Dr. Justine Lee, everybody. Stay tuned for more Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deb Wolf.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Deb Wolf. And once again, we've got the privilege of having as our guest Dr. Justine Lee, board-certified veterinary specialist and author of It's a Dog's Life, But It's Your Carpet, and It's a Cat's World, You Just Live in It. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Lee.
Thanks so much for having me on, Deb.
Oh, it's great to have you again. So I guess we're ready to talk about winter blues. They said it was the most depressing Monday last week, and supposedly because the it's just so dark and dreary. How can we get our pets exercising in the winter?
Great question. You know, I live in Minnesota where it's winter 6 months out of the year. So there's still really important things you need to do to exercise your dog because this time of the year, we Minnesotans hardly get enough exercise too. So if you have a really well-trained dog and you live on a slow street, I'll tell you the clue that I do. I use a Chuck It throwing toy, which is one of my favorite throwing toys with a tennis ball, and I literally will toss my dog on the sidewalk in front of my house when it's 10 degrees out at least 20 times a day. It's a great way of them being able to get out and run, and I'm literally doing it in the alley or the driveway or right on the sidewalk. Obviously,
oh, I used to use a squash racket. Before they invented those Huck It toys, I used to use a squash racket.
That's a great
idea.
It's
short, and you could, you know, it's a small thing, and you could keep it on you. But yeah, some dogs, you know, if your arm is not up to your dog's legs, and it's one against four, probably it isn't. If your dog's between the age of 2 and 8 and a running sporting breed, a retriever or a hunting dog, well, your arm's just not going to cut it, is it?
Exactly. So it's a great way of exercising your dog, and you can do it for a burst of time. You know, 20 throws takes 10 minutes. Do it twice a day, and your dog gets plenty of exercise. Just make sure that it's away from any cars or trucks or anything that's going to endanger your dog. The second thing I like to also do is I also like to make sure that my dog gets at least 10 miles of exercise a week, even in the winter. So even if it means bundling up and going to the dog park to make sure that they have enough exercise, or walking them again twice a day for 15 minutes each time, when you're bundled up and your dog's bundled up, it's a great way of exercising them. And the third thing is work with your dog trainer. I know a lot of the dog trainer facilities that we have here in Minnesota have an indoor doggy day play date where you get a punch card for 10 visits. And during certain times, they'll have appropriate sized dogs, usually anywhere between 7 to 10 dogs, all in this huge dog training facility where they can run around and play. So great way of providing socialization, playing with other dogs, and meeting other dog owners. So again, get out there and make sure to exercise your dog, even though it's cold.
What about kids and teenagers? I mean, it seems to me that there's an awful lot of lounging about in that age group when they could be out exercising the dogs. I like to make that part of the chores, you know, part of the family
absolutely.
Duties.
Make it part of their responsibility to walk their dog. You know, it's a great way for them to get out of the house too. So when in doubt, absolutely delegate that task.
And if the dog is a big dog, it really is an incredible independence thing for a young woman, a young girl, because normally you can't go out anywhere alone. But if you take the big dog, well, then she's allowed to go visit her friends around the corner and talk to the neighbors and maybe go to the corner store and get something for you and come back without always having to have another human watching her. You've got better than that if you've got a well-trained dog.
Exactly. The biggest thing is making sure that your dog is well-trained and can walk on a leash appropriately. Because if you're petite like I am and you have a Great Dane that takes off after a squirrel, again, can be really dangerous if your dog isn't trained to be recalled on a come command. So I know that you're passionate about it too. When in doubt, you always want to make sure your dog is appropriately trained. Great mental stimulation, but more importantly, keeps your dog healthy and safe and out of danger.
And if there's something you want to do that you think your dog's not up to, work toward that. Make that your goal. Find a trainer or somebody who's actually got you. You might have a friend whose dog waits outside Starbucks and goes to the dog park and comes to kindergarten class, and you're thinking, I wish my dog could do that. That friend may be able to help you get that out of your dog. Or maybe they'll tell you the trainer they used. But whatever that little thing is, that event, that routine, that thing that would make your dog's life easier and your life easier, if you're not doing it because your dog's not well behaved enough, he's got to learn somehow. He's got to be put on a leash and taught how it's done. So, yeah, go out and do it right now. Just get a trainer's help if you need it.
I also think it's helpful to have someone hold you accountable. So every week I always will call one person to dog walk with, and it's really helpful because when it's 10 degrees or 20 degrees, no one wants to go out to the dog park. But when you have a buddy to go with, it's a lot more encouraging for you all to go out and get exercise together.
Yes, I guess so. I used to have running partners, and they, you know, it never failed that the dog, whatever dog I chose to take, and right now it's my standard poodle stud who's about 6 years old and raring to go. But most of the time, you know, I'd have a customer, a dog who was a real runner, and I'd take him with me 5K, 10K. They were more reliable than the humans I was supposed to go running with. Believe me, the dog always wants to go.
That's true. I actually have some great tips about running on my website at drjustinelee.com, how long you can run for, what weather conditions are ideal, if your dog is black furred, has a smushed face, it's more than 80 degrees out. Again, we do not want to exercise our dog during peak heat conditions because we worry about heat stroke. But the good thing is most dogs can tolerate cold weather exercise very well.
Yeah, you bring up the heat stroke. I've had some terrible stories brought to my attention on air of dogs where the dog was able to go for runs his whole life long. But as he got older and older and older, the person didn't change the routine. They didn't change the speed. They didn't change the distance. Because in the 5 or 6 years that had gone by, the person's fitness hadn't changed that much. But the dog actually had a stroke on a boiling hot day at noon when the guy was running 5K with a 10-year-old Dalmatian. Now, that's a terrible thing to do to that poor dog. Exactly. But the dog always wants to go. So maybe we can talk about how to know when, you know, your dog looks like he wants to go, but that dog would have been better off to go for a walk around the block and do a run later. Not right then. So you kind of have to judge for him, right? He's counting on you to not offer it if it's dangerous.
That's the hard thing is, you know, you bring up a great point, Deb. We've bred dogs to please us. So of course they're going to wag their tail and be happy when we come home. Of course they're going to be happy and wag their tail when we pick up a leash to go for exercise. And I know that my own personal dog, after he turned about 7 or 8, and he was really densely muscled, he was a rescue pit bull, they don't want to run for miles and miles and miles. So my general rule is, you know, 2 to 3 to 5 miles is fine. But as they get older, they may have underlying osteoarthritis where they get really sore after running. Now, if you're not running really fast like me, you're pacing slow, your dog is probably just doing a fast walk, and that's okay. But if you're running really fast at a pace that your dog is really exerting a lot of energy, I'm going to encourage you not to do more than a few miles as they approach an older age of 8 to 10 years of age. They would rather watch you run and go for a walk during your cool down instead.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And a bicycle or rollerblades or anything like that, not fair. This totally makes it not fair. If you're going down a hill, you're not working, but your dog still is. So keep that in mind, everybody. Okay, well, thank you so much. Dr. Justine Lee, once again, has joined us, author of It's a Dog's Life, But It's Your Carpet, and It's a Cat's World. You just live in it. So I hope you'll come again next week and join us on air at Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Doctor, will you be back again next week?
I will. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, everybody. Exercise. Get out there and exercise with your dogs and cats. And we'll find out some more about that and other things from Dr. Lee next week. Stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that
you know
I really do.
I really do.
Hello. You're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and you're listening to Deb Wolf, and you might know I run a boarding kennel. It's up to 50 dogs at a time on a 5-acre farm out near Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I've been a dog trainer and a cat trainer and author of dog books and host of a radio show for a very long time now. So I've worked with loads and loads and loads of dogs and cats, but this year on New Year's, I had tickets to a party and someone was supposed to watch the kennel and I had all these great plans. And then one of our dogs, one of the oldest dogs that's staying with us, got very, very ill. And so I had to take her to the vet, and she received treatment and came home that same night for New Year's Eve, but there was no way I was going to go out and leave her. Now, how do we know she had to go to the vet? How do we know that this just wasn't normal for her, this dog we hardly knew, first time we'd ever looked after her, elderly dog? How did we know? Well, there's all kinds of signs when your dog really, really needs to go to the emergency room. So we're going to talk to an expert and find out, how do you know when you have to go to the emergency room, when it's really important you get there fast? Dr. Justine Lee, welcome to the show, Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yes, well, poor Holly, she made it to the vet, but, you know, it would be hard for the girls who work for me to know that this was different than her usual doesn't always want to get up, doesn't always eat and drink, doesn't always look happy, kind of out of it sometimes. She was, you know, very elderly lab and new to us, but there was something different about it. So how can people know when their dog or their cat really is in trouble and needs a vet?
Great question, Deb. My general philosophy is if you're worried in the middle of the night, you need to get to a vet right away. So a couple of signs that we want to look for include things like difficulty breathing, if your dog or your cat are open mouth breathing and constantly panting, if they're restless, and if they wake you up in the middle of the night. This is especially important. I know you have a standard poodle. They can get a bloat or a gastric dilatation volvulus. And sometimes the only clinical sign is anxiety, a distended stomach, or retching and trying to vomit.
If yeah, that's like Marley signs, and Me. I just want to tell listeners,
exactly,
if you ever saw the movie Marley and Me, they kind of covered that really well. Okay,
right.
So yeah, when the stomach
another
twists.
Another sign would be if they're collapsed, or you can simply lift their gums if their gums look really pale. If you put your hands on both sides of the thorax and their heart is racing, if their pupils are dilated, if you notice any cloudiness or bulging of their eyes, excessive bleeding anywhere, in cats, straining to urinate, whether urinating in inappropriate places or they haven't urinated in a litter box for at least 12 hours, these are all signs that you need to get to a vet immediately. You can't wait until the next morning. You have to get to an emergency veterinarian.
What about, you know what, doctor? I want to ask you about cats and dogs and the difference, because I have a lot of rescue cats and I do own quite a few dogs myself. The difference to me is really astounding. Like, it's so stark. Dogs, when they're unhealthy, will often show me. They'll often try and tell me. They'll often signal. They'll wake you up, all that sort of stuff. Cats, for me anyway, they don't show it. They hide it.
Exactly.
Is that true?
Exactly.
Okay, it is true.
That is totally true. So if you notice your cat hiding in the closet, underneath the bed, you need to get to a vet immediately, even in the middle of the night. Cats were, you know, if you look at big cats, they aren't designed to show their clinical signs because it shows weakness and someone else is going to take over. So by natural selection, they don't show their signs until it's really severe. Dogs don't hide quite as much. Cats do. So again, with cats, as soon as they start hiding, you must get to the vet immediately. Something severe is going on.
Okay. So now that's when you go to the emergency room. What about when you go to your vet? How do you know if it's something you can deal with at home? It's mild stomach upset. It's a mild symptom. The dog's going to get over. The cat's going to get over. Or really, okay, time to go see the vet. What's the difference there?
Sure. That's a great question. You know, if your dog vomits once or twice, not a big deal, as long as they're not retching or not in any pain. But if the problem doesn't go away after you've tried withholding food and water and they're still vomiting, those are signs you need to get to a vet right away. Some things you can manage at home. Maybe it's a mild hot spot. You know, you can shave it up gently. You can, you know, gently clean it. You can prevent your dog from looking at it. But if it's not getting any better, you need to get to a vet. When in doubt, always call. The receptionist or the nurse may be able to help assist you. And I always believe, when in doubt, go to the vet because they can always triage you, especially in the emergency room, and decide whether or not you even need to be seen. So the safest thing to do is
what about things at home? Like, before I even call the vet, I try to figure stuff out. Like, does the dog or cat have a temperature? Have they eaten or drank lately? Have they been active? Like, I try and see, you know, because I know they're going to ask me some stuff. What should people be ready to answer when they call?
Yeah, so how many times has your dog vomited? Is your cat hiding? Is your pet having any difficulty breathing? Are they panting constantly? What color are their gums? When was the last time they ate? Is there any chance they got into anything? When do they start showing clinical signs? These are all things that you want to be aware of. And remember, the sooner you diagnose a problem, the sooner you recognize it, the less expensive it's going to be. So better
to
get to a vet
when you say that about the gums. I'm betting right now that most of the people listening have no idea what color their cat or dog's gums are. They might guess pink. They might guess black. Maybe.
Yeah.
They might guess mixtures of both. They don't know. And so if they don't know what normal's like, how are they going to know if it's a problem, right? Is this going to look like a dog mouth, a cat mouth?
Yep. They should be pink. So when in doubt, check right now so you know what normal looks like. And that way, in case of an emergency, like internal bleeding, you can tell the difference.
Because there are quite a few dogs with black flecking and freckling and pigment on the inside the mouth. So it can confuse you. And chows are a whole other thing. They don't even have it. They have giraffe tongues for some reason.
That's a good point. You know, as a little clue, there's a couple other places you can look on the body. You can look and just literally flip the ear over. And sometimes that will look light pink. It's not going to be as pink as the gums, but if it looks really, really pale, that will give you a good indicator. And it'll let you
Okay,
pick
so
up
that's about, is that about circulation? Is that what we're looking for, the
yes.
blood flow?
It's okay. about circulation and red blood cell count.
Now, I've been shown that
so it'll
if
help
I take...
give you an idea if your dog's anemic.
If you take a dog that you're worried about this way and you kind of flip up its lip and you press with your finger on the gum, you know, it will go white when you're pressing. And then when you remove your finger, it should get pink again really quick.
Yep.
But if it doesn't,
that's right.
Okay, so that's how people can test, right? Can they do that at home?
They can do that at home, absolutely. But the biggest thing is that test is a little bit harder to assess. It's a little subjective. When in doubt,
yeah.
literally just lift your dog's gum and see what color it is. It should be a light
okay.
pink to a darker pink after the exercise. And hopefully, by being cognizant of that and knowing what signs to look for, you can take your dog to the vet. I list a huge list of things to look for on my website at Dr. Justine Lee for when to know to go into the emergency room. And again, if it bothers you, if your dog is up in the middle of the night, your cat is howling, panting, open mouth breathing, when in doubt, get to a vet right away.
Well, you all know your pets. If your pet's stressed out, acting in a way it doesn't normally act, you know when it's time to go. Don't put it off, right? It's better sooner than later.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So thank you for joining us, Dr. Justine Lee. It's been great having you once again, our board-certified veterinary specialist, who's helping us out with some emergency issues and some other just public awareness, how to keep our pets safe. Thank you very much from Smart Animal Talk listeners.
Thank you so much. I'm actually off to see an emergency right now, but I look forward to being on in future weeks.
Is it a dog or a cat?
It's a cat.
Uh-oh.
So
what
I
happened?
Go save a cat life. So wish me
yes.
luck. I don't know
well,
the details
hopefully
yet.
It's
but
number two or three. Good luck. Godspeed. And we'll
Thank
catch
you.
It. We'll check up with you later and find out hopefully
Sounds
a happy
good.
Ending. Okay. Well, we're definitely going to let her go do that. You know, kind of puts things in perspective when your guest has to go save an animal life. All right, everyone. Stay tuned. Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deb Wolf.